What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Hour number two is the final hour today of the Hoffman Show. We got hoops coming up, pregame starting at 6 o'clock. I believe it's Georgetown hoops tonight. Wizards will be over on 106.7. Maryland tonight. Wizards over on the 106.7, the Fan, Anthony? Or are they on 1580 tonight? They're on 1580 tonight. Okay. So got your basketball straightened out. We're talking football until 6 o'clock. That's all you need to know right now. And you need to know that Michael Phillips is going to join us because it's 5 o'clock on a Monday. And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's still football season.
Today's top story from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
Michael Phillips was there down on the big old pirate ship in Tampa where he saw a Commanders victory. Michael, happy victory Monday to you, sir.
I'm just so excited. I do have to issue a very minor correction, not to bring down the mood. Oh. They didn't let me on the pirate ship.
Well, I mean, I meant the big proverbial pirate ship. I did ask last week on Tuesday, because Mitch Tischler joins us, I was like, if they win, will you and JP do your postgame show on the pirate ship? And I was told by Mitchell, we tried in week one, they wouldn't let us, to which I replied, I believe every bit of that.
We went over pregame, me and one of the reporters who had never been to the pirate ship before. Now, I will say, like 8 years ago, I went on the pirate ship. I've been on the pirate ship. I guess things have changed. There were two staircases on the pirate ship, one in the front, one in the back. Went to the one in the front. Hey, can we go up on the pirate ship? And the security guy said, no, we're having a private party up there. You can't. So I chatted with him for a minute. We went on our way. We walk around. We walk to the back. There's another staircase. I said, hey, doesn't hurt to try twice. Walk up to the guy. Hey, we're from Washington. We're down here. We'd love to see the pirate ship. Can we go up and, you know, take a picture on the pirate ship? And he goes, yeah, absolutely. Okay. He goes, the only thing is, this is the exit. So what you need to do is you just need to walk around to the other side of the ship. There will be a staircase there, and I'm sure that guy will let you up, and you can go see the pirate ship.
Oh, that's a funny story. That's well delivered. That's a good stand-up comic bit right there, Michael Phillips. But you want to know where that staircase led on that pirate ship?
It was a staircase to heaven yesterday.
Yeah, it was. Well, for the Bucks fans, it was a staircase to Loserville because the Commanders went down there.
Loserville.
And one, real quick, just on seed setting beyond your ventures to try to get on the pirate ship. It sounded on television like there were a ton of Commanders fans down there. Was that something you felt in the stadium, or were they just well placed near microphones?
They were. So, you know, two levels to the stadium, upper deck and lower deck. The lower deck behind the bench was all Commanders fans. They had that section. They didn't have any of the other sections. So if I'm doing percentages, I want to be fair, it's probably 80-20. They were not, it wasn't close to 50-50. But that 20 was loud and excited and got into it. And when the kick went in to win the game, they made some noise and you heard it. It wasn't like a murmur and, you know, sometimes you get like the sporadic cheers from the visiting team. It felt like a little bit of a roar there. Like, yeah, there were enough of them that they made some noise when that kick doinked in.
Yeah, you felt it on some Terry chants. You felt it on a couple of penalties that went Washington's way, that there were big roars. And I'd imagine that probably helps the guys on the sideline feel pretty juiced. It's like the right amount of support while still feeling like you're against everyone else in the stadium. As that game's unfolding, and, you know, especially late, Jaden gets that run on third down to extend it. Was there the feeling of inevitability in the stadium, considering all the things that had led to that point, that it just seems like he always finds a way, they always find a way, even without him last week against Dallas with Mariota? Is that what it felt like as you were watching it in the press box? Like, here we go again, but instead of here we go again in all the ways that have been terrible for 30 years, here we go again in a good way.
Five in a row. How could you not expect it now? They've done this every week for five consecutive weeks. It's absolutely incredible. I will say I had no worries about Jaden performing in that moment. There were a lot of questions to me around the clock. 4:50 to go. They couldn't run the ball. I thought it was going to be tricky to get the clock to zero. Austin Ekeler rattles off his first run, and it's like, okay, he can run the ball. We've got a viable running option. They've got a shot at doing this. Because I was worried they were going to score, but it was going to be a two-and-a-half-minute score. Because if you can't run the ball, it's really hard to run the clock. So when Ekeler rolled off his run, that was a really positive sign. And then obviously Jaden knows how to run. He got a key one as well that kept the clock moving. Todd Bowles didn't call the timeouts in front of the two-minute warning. Didn't end up mattering. But it was just another thing where it's like, oh, they might get this clock to zero. Like, this is a thing that's happening here. So I had no doubts Jaden was going to come through in that moment. My only question was whether he could get the clock where it needed to be. And credit to Cliff Kingsbury on that, too. That's very much a coordinator game as well. He's keeping an eye on that. I thought he did a fantastic job.
Certainly did, and not just in that time, the winning time moment, but all game long to control the clock. 35-plus minutes of time of possession in a game where you average 2.5 yards a carry. Those two stats are not supposed to go together, but they did. What did Jaden have to say after the game, and what impressed you about the way that he was able to manage this game from an efficiency standpoint without the support of a running game?
Yeah, if I didn't know Jaden better, I'd say he was putting on an act with his nonchalance, right? Like even the Mannings and Bradys and Mahomeses of the world, like watch a Mahomes an AFC title game press conference, like he gets into it a little bit. He's a little bit like, hey, that was cool out there, guys. Like, that was all right. Jaden didn't do that at all. And it's not an act. And he is, just so cool, calm, collected. Dan Quinn said today, most excited he's ever seen Jaden was when Marcus Mariota threw the touchdown pass in Dallas to clinch the sixth seed, because he was so happy for Marcus in that moment. But when it's him on the line, he shuts it down and he goes into kind of ice cold Terminator mode. He knew what he had to do. He yelled the bloody face early, and certainly there was one hit that, my goodness, he got his world rocked. I think he knew, riding on the bus over at 4 o'clock in Tampa, I'm gonna have to get beat up today to win this football game. And he was up for it, and he did it. And in the press conference after, did not throw his running backs under the bus one tiny bit. Say, there are gonna be days where I'm off, and they're gonna have to pick me up. Which there aren't, apparently. It was a very nice thing of him to say. I don't know that we have those days anymore. Very complimentary of everybody, full team effort. Mentioned that, they had some good runs and felt the offensive line got going a little bit, just not even a hint of what it took from him personally to win that game.
Michael Phillips was there at the game. Of course, he's also the host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan in Richmond, a longtime reporter covering the team. You can listen to his show daily on the free Odyssey app. What was the, like, outside of Jaden and the general game management by the offense, whether it's a playmaker on defense, whether it's another guy offensively, like, what as you're walking out of the stadium last night, is the other most impressive thing to you, or the thing that, like, you woke up this morning thinking about, non-Jaden Daniels category?
I think Bobby Wagner's fumble recovery was just so smooth. How many times does that ball get loose and the defender sees it and jumps on it and it bounces and there's a pile and a scrum and we're sorting it out for a while? That ball fell. I don't even know how he did it. I mean, that's like, Ichiro style reaction to the fastball right there. He sees that ball on the ground and in one just silky smooth movement, picks it up, gets on it, establishes possession, moves on with his life, doesn't even have to deal with the scrum. That's a grown man player showing up to play in a big game. And you knew he would, obviously, with his history. I'm just crazy impressed with that fumble recovery, Craig.
I think that's a great call. Like, he was Johnny on the spot, because of course he was. He's Bobby Wagner, and that's the thing he does. And yet, Michael, did you know that was his first ever career fumble recovery in the playoffs?
I believe it, just because, you know, you got to be right place, right time. Somebody's got to drop it. But, you know, the margin for error was so low in this game. If he doesn't get that ball, it's zero turnovers either way. It's a very different game. You know, we're probably second guessing the Dan Quinn fourth down decisions, which I wouldn't be, just for the record. I was, you know, that's why I'm on Twitter, so you can get my real time opinions. In real time, I liked it. I still like it this morning. But he was there, right place, right time, opportunistic. And I think you have to consider that one of the turning point plays of the game. The other one defensively for me is when you hold Tampa to 3 instead of 7 to get the ball back tied. That was a huge momentum swing as well, to finally be able to pump the brakes on those guys.
For sure. And the guy at the center of that, Bobby Wagner, huge second down stop on Baker Mayfield in that final defensive drive. Michael Phillips with us, reminding us the only reason that you might want to be on Twitter is to read his tweets here on The Hoffman Show. You don't even have to go on Twitter to get his thoughts. He'll just say them into the telephone, and we play them out to you here on the Team 980. Okay, let's quietly, secretly, because we're professionals trying to be objective, talk about a few negatives from the game and things that I'll put it this way. Be a lot easier to beat Detroit if these couple of things can get cleaned up. First and foremost,
I know number one is.
Which one do you think is number one? There's two main options.
Lattimore's number one. He was bad last night. He just was. I think he's probably still injured. Evans got the better of him, and that frustrated him, and obviously that stuff builds. The question is he still battling the hamstring, that it's a bad idea to play him against Detroit, or is this just, hey, he's not prime Lattimore. He's all right, but he can't go against your A.J. Browns of the world and your Mike Evanses of the world. And that's all right. You can work with that. But I worry it's the first one, not the second one. He's not fully right yet.
So if that's the case, like, what do they do, and what was said about this last night in the game? Because ultimately, like, they did make some adjustments. The second half was better than the first. Evans didn't have any catches on that final drive, but he was targeted 7 times and had 7 catches. That's not good, especially when you're about to go face Amon-Ra St. Brown, who at this stage in their respective careers is very different, obviously, type of player, but better than Evans. And Jamison Williams, who is, I mean, I don't know who the hell covers him with that kind of speed. Like, you're going to have to play a ton of zone and tell Quan Martin and Jeremy Chinn, like, and Percy Butler, do not let that dude over the top, because if he runs past you, he is past you. There is no catching him. And so
I don't think there's,
what do you do with that?
I don't think there's anybody on the roster who can run that fast.
He's in fairness, there's like 4 guys in the NFL that can. So, like, most rosters don't have anybody that can run as fast as Jamison Williams.
Yeah, exactly. I thought Sanra still was excellent again for the most part. You know, I have not gone back and rewatched yet. My hunch in the moment was that he showed up when he needed to, made some plays. I think it was a full team effort, as you mentioned. I think it took everybody to contain that group on the last bit. And I thought Dorrance Armstrong did his part, speeding everything up front. That was very helpful as well to you know, have them not be covering those guys for as long. I don't know that there's a single name answer to, okay, no Lattimore, here's what you do. I think it's that. It's a team effort, and it's finding a way to get the little edges where you can and get the pressures where you can in order to maybe cover up a little bit of that weakness. You mentioned 2 weaknesses. I'm assuming you mean the other one is Brian Robinson. Trestway had 0 punting yards last night, so we can talk about his day too if we need to.
Tress, you lazy son of a gun. How dare you? Why did you even get to get on the plane? Why did you even get football pads, you punter? No.
It's a roster spot that could have gone to somebody who contributed, Craig.
I mean, they could have. Hey, we could have solved 2 problems in one. No Tressway, get Chris Rodriguez active. Boom. Michael, I solved it.
Double boom. I love it. Brian Robinson. I'm not worried as much about that one just because of Austin Ekeler towards the end. Was hitting his groove, was running well. McNichols, Rodriguez, they've got options there. This is a smart staff. They've made the moves, and they've cut bait when they've needed to. I think B-Rob will be active on Sunday for sure. I just don't think he'll be as central to the game plan, or on Saturday, rather. I just don't think he'll be as central to the game plan as he was this week. No. no fault, no stones thrown here. Just it's the playoffs. You got to win, and it's next man up at this point. And I feel really good about Austin Ekeler.
I mean, then I do think there's a question though of like Chris Rodriguez did have one hell of a December, and he has looked, I think, like the more effective rusher. So what do you do with that information? Like, do you have four guys active? Because I do think it's not worth sacrificing McNichols. People just want to put McNichols out, but that pony personnel where it's McNichols and Ekeler together, that stuff works a lot better with Jeremy McNichols in the game because of his versatility. Some of the stuff to have him in as a pass protector and then let Austin Ekeler get out in routes, it causes defenses some serious conundrums of like, which personnel do we match this with? Do we treat Ekeler like a running back or a receiver? Like, there's a lot of stuff that happens, and McNichols is the guy that is kind of the pivot point of that package. But at the same time, like, you have to have a first and second down running back who's effective, and Brian Robinson doesn't feel like he's been effective for the better part of a month.
Here's the beauty, Craig, of being a sports talk host and not the coach of a football team. Yeah, I just have four active. It's so easy for me to say right now on the radio. Yeah, I'd have four active. I understand that force is a hard decision. Is that a Ben Sinnott decision? I don't know. Like, you know, we can run down the list and figure out who the name is that's next one up. It just feels like a really important part of the game. And, you know, Jaden's so good, and Jaden covers up for so much. But you owe it to Jaden as the coach to give him every advantage you can give him going into the game. And that advantage is to have Chris Rodriguez active and playing. Maybe it means you sit B-Rob. I don't know that they're quite ready for that discussion. They might be, when they run the numbers on Friday and figure out their inactives. But yeah, I think you got to find a way to do it. You got to find a way to give Jaden the tools he needs to be at his best.
There is a wide receiver named Chris Moore who played for them on Sunday. And it would seem that perhaps that could be done, but I mean, I guess he did play like 12 snaps. I got to figure out what roles he was in, and you know, is that easily substitutable package wise? What's the special teams impact? They've had Tremaine up at times. I mean, Crowder didn't play a ton of offensive snaps. They really saved him. That's actually another interesting thing that they're doing right now. Like, Austin Ekeler was just named the All-Pro kick returner, second team. He's not even returning kicks right now. Like, after the concussion, they're like, nope, we're not messing with that. He's too valuable to the offense. They're leaving Luke McCaffrey back there, and Luke's doing a nice job. And then Jamison Crowder, who's obviously had some really big days for them offensively and some really key, important, and memorable catches, think Philly game. Like, he didn't really play a lot offensively. He's out there to be a punt returner, and they're limiting his reps because he's battling through an injury. And I think the management of the personnel, you know, you don't anticipate your starting running back averaging 1.6 a carry. That's just a bad day at the office. But the managing of the personnel and how they're using these guys, I think, is really interesting and something that's worth watching this week as they try to figure out what to do with that run game.
Yeah, and I think for the last few weeks, I was kind of excusing it by saying, look, it's a group project. You know, the O-line hasn't been as good as they need to be either in run blocking. I don't think that was the case last night. I think they were good enough to do better than 1.6 yards per carry. I think that, you know, B-Rob's wearing this one. Doesn't make him less of a guy. People are always going to love him. He's always, you know, what he overcame. And certainly, you know, he was a tough, hard-nosed guy when we were all begging for tough, hard-nosed guys on the football team. He's just not having success right now. And right now, you're playing a playoff game in Detroit against the number one seed. It's not a time for sentimentality.
No, I agree with that as well. And I also do wonder what it means for him long term here as he's getting near the end of his rookie deal. But we can deal with that after the season because there's more season to go. So the last thing for Michael Phillips here, of course, the host of MP on the Mic, 10 a.m. to noon on 910 The Fan down in Richmond. He was in Tampa last night. Michael, first of all, will you be in Detroit this weekend?
I will not be in Detroit this weekend.
Okay.
When we were in Tampa, I was remembering a game maybe 5-6 years ago where after the game, you're mentioning the crowd, and I just remember after the game, DJ Swanger and Josh Norman went off on a little rant about how they get better support in Tampa than they do in Landover.
I remember that. I was there for that. Yeah.
And my, how times have changed. They still have good support in Tampa, but now they actually have good support in Landover too.
That is true.
I just saw the ticket prices. They're not going to have good support in Detroit, and it's nothing. It's got nothing to do with anything other than the fact that that city has been thirsty for a winner, probably as thirsty as we've been, if not thirstier, and they've got one, and they are backing their boys.
They are not going to open up a whole lot of tickets to the whatever the league minimum is. That is what they are going to get out of the Detroit Lions, and they might even say, like, hey, Lions fans, if you want extra tickets, over here. What's your first blush look at this matchup for Washington, and what kind of chance do you give them to spring the upset?
It's not zero. It's not a good number, though. This is a really good Detroit team. They're well coached. They're aggressive. They've got playmakers. They are really fundamentally sound on both sides of the ball. They play tough, hard-nosed football. They've got the crowd advantage. They've got the bye week advantage. They're red hot right now. Everything's going for them. I really like lining up with number five, though. He's the difference maker here, right? If Mariota started, I would give them a 1-2% chance of winning. With Jaden starting, can I get to 15-20% by Saturday night? I do plan on talking myself into it.
Yeah, I mean, if I think by the end of the week, I will talk to myself that if these teams played five times, Washington would win at least one, and that's 20%. So math checks out for me. Michael Phillips, you can catch him 10 a.m. to noon on the free Odyssey app, or if you're driving through 910 The Fan in Richmond, also on 105.1 FM. Michael, appreciate the time as always, sir. I'll talk to you later in the week, and we'll talk to you again next Monday, which will be a Tell the Truth Monday, and one in five times, statistically proven, would be a victory Monday. And Michael, all we need is one.
You don't have to beat them all five times, Craig. You just have to beat them this time.
Just have to beat them this time. Michael, thank you, sir.
Take care.
That's Michael Phillips with us here on The Hoffman Show. When we get back, our pick six at 5:30, because the show ends at 6 o'clock today. So the six players that we identified as keys to the game on Friday, how'd they do? A couple of them, they were enormous factors in Washington's win. We'll break it down next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app on a victory Monday for the Washington Commanders. Typically, we go around the NFL this time. We'll do that tomorrow, review the non-Commanders games of Wild Card Weekend, because, well, there's one more game left tonight, and we're missing a third of our show. We have Maryland Hoops tonight. Pre-game starts at 6, so we are going to hit right now what we usually do at 6 o'clock. The name's not quite as neat, but the concept works just as well. It's our pick six at, well, it's at 5:30.
The six biggest Commander storylines.
It is torn!
Delivered at 6 o'clock sharp. It's the pick six at 6.
We set out to find a leader, someone who could take this franchise to the next level, build an elite team that consistently competes for championships.
All right, let's party. On Fridays, we pick six players who we think will have an outsized impact on the game for the Commanders. And the only rule is you can't pick quarterbacks. And you can pick the opposing players if you think stopping that player is going to be a huge factor in a Commanders win. And, well, we picked some really interesting ones on Friday. We start with...
Number one.
Anthony, you picked Tyler Biadasz. Tyler Biadasz.
Yes, I picked Tyler Biadasz in part to... The Bucs' ultra-aggressive, blitz-heavy, you know, defensive unit. And I think you did a good job of outlining how we were able to, like, slow them earlier today. You know, these long, extended drives, you don't have the same energy that you would have, you know, if you're on and off the field after, like, three and outs and things of that nature. But we had, you know, what was it, a 17-play drive? That was
17
that took up like 9 minutes. Then we also had like two other drives that also were at least 10 plays at the minimum.
Bro, they had five 10-play drives.
Five. Okay. Yeah.
Five 10-play drives.
So when you can do that, you can dominate the time of possession. You can, you know, keep those guys off balance. It's going to be tough to, you know, play in and play out blitz as heavy and effective as they were early in the game. And I think we did a good job, you know, limited to them. We only gave up one sack. And, you know, Jaden, he wasn't pressured a lot. So I think that's also in part to, you know, Jaden and Tyler Biadasz and the rest of the offensive line.
I think Biadasz's organization was better than, like, was better than like his actual play, right? He didn't grade out super well on PFF, and I haven't watched the film back yet to have an idea of what happened. But in a little bit that I have watched, and in watching the game last night, they had a ton of replays, everything. Like, there weren't a ton of free runners coming at Jaden. And the times that there was quick pressures, like, guys got beat quickly. The last couple weeks, there has been a ton of unblocked pressure with Michael Dieter at center. There's just a miscommunication of where guys are supposed to go. And it seemed like they were way more on their P's and Q's. And I think Biadasz has a huge role to play in that. That doesn't mean that they play great up front. Obviously, the run game was absolute booty all day long. But they did a good enough job in the passing game to protect Jaden, or at least at times where there was pressure and they didn't have a great or didn't do a great job of picking it up and he had to flush. Like, they were able to wash it all to one side and give him a clean exit, often to his right, which is the way that he wants to go to be able to keep his eyes downfield and throw with his right hand rolling right. So they only gave up 15 pressures on 40 dropbacks, which, considering the amount that Tampa Bay blitzes, is pretty significant. And actually, let me look real quick. Pass rush coverage. No, where is that? It's in a different part of PFF. But I believe they blitzed on 55% of their snaps, and to give up only like 37% pressure rate on that heavy of a blitz is really good. And the thing is, like, a lot of those pressures, I don't think were very impactful. So on the reasons that you picked Tyler Biadasz, I think Tyler Biadasz did a pretty damn good job.
Number two.
I picked Terry McLaurin second, and I feel really good about that. Anthony, I was like, look, Terry's always going to be a factor, but they don't have a chance if he's not a big factor. And they come out first drive of the game, first third down of the game. Okay, Tampa, you want a blitz? You want to leave Terry McLaurin one-on-one with Jamel Dean or anybody else? Watch what my guy can do. The red zone stuff. He is such a weapon down there. And I was actually talking about this with Keim earlier today. I don't know when this is coming out, but I taped with John for his show earlier today. And I was like, John dropped this amazing stat. First of all, that's Terry's 11th red zone touchdown this season. 11 this season. Okay, this is a guy that did not have that many in the previous 4 years of his career, 5 years of his career. That is more than his entire career into this year combined. And if you think about it, it makes all the sense in the world. What do you lose in the red zone? You lose space. Well, who's the best contested catch guy where there isn't a lot of space in the entire NFL? Terry McLaurin. So this makes sense. They weaponize him down there. The patience he shows on that in-cut route to run the back line, excellent. Jaden just waiting on it. Bang, hits him. They tried the fade, which didn't go down, but like almost did, which is an incredible almost catch. I mean, his ability to track the ball is really special. I know the Post did a really big graphics and words piece on that over the weekend that I'm really excited to go back and read now because I didn't get a chance to over the weekend. So, like, Terry was awesome. The energy he brings, and I think they did a great job of keeping him involved. They had a bubble screen at one point. They didn't go anywhere, but it's like, nope, we haven't forgotten about him. This dude's going to be involved. You better plan for him. And I think that also opens up other stuff because there are times that he's getting doubled, and that means that Ertz is open, or Diami's got a one-on-one, or OZ's got a one-on-one, that they're a little lighter in run support, and you get, you know, the one good carry they had all game. So there's just so many things that having a dangerous number one wide receiver does for you. And he's going to have another banger of a game against Detroit, who's going to try to play man coverage and do all the stuff that Detroit does. And it's going to be up to Terry and Jaden to take advantage like they did in this one. They sure did. And hoorah, Terry McLaurin, first career playoff win.
Yeah, and one thing I will want to add, the fact that they were going to him in the red zone, even on the fade comeback that he tried to run on Jamel Dean.
Yep.
I feel like the only reason that didn't work was just because Jamel's a taller defender. But 9 times out of 10, like, most of the corners that Terry's going to go up against are going to be his size or, like, you know, a little smaller. And he's going to have that favorable one-on-one. But still have that faith to go to him in that spot, I don't know, just speaks to, you know, Jaden and Terry, like, being on the same page. And that's what you want out of your QB1 and your wide receiver one.
Terry, an 88.9 PFF grade. Is that good? Yeah. That's real good.
Number three,
Anthony Haney. You picked Jalen McMillan as having to step up opposite of Mike Evans. Mixed day for the rookie. And that was a big part of the Commanders getting their victory.
Yeah, I think he had sort of a quieter day just because Mike Evans got off. You know, Baker only threw the ball 18 times. He's 15 for 18, and 7 of those went to Mike Evans. So everybody else had a quieter day. Jalen, he did end up having a drop, but he also had an explosive two that we end up giving up. So
it's like a fake screen, I think, that he leaked up the middle on. That was a really good design. Liam Cohen's good, man.
Now he is. But I think for the most part, like, we did a good job of, like, keeping him in check. And then when we double, you know, Mike Evans, putting Marshawn up against him in the red zone, I think we did a good job of just taking him away. And that's what you want to be able to do if you're going to be giving that much attention to Mike Evans after the first half he had.
For sure. McMillan on the day matched up most often with Mike Sainra still. He had one catch for 15 yards. He, you know, they put Bobby Wagner as having the catch that was over the middle. Mm. But he's got one target against Juice that Juice broke up, and he had one target against Lattimore, which went nowhere as well. And I think that you had, and that's the one that's considered a drop. But I think that's the kind of thing that you have to do is, like, you might have to, with the current state of Marshawn Lattimore, go with the old Patriots. We're going to put our best corner on the number two receiver, make sure that he's dead, and then just double the number one. So I'm very curious to see if they can implement that on Amon-Ra St. Brown this week, or do they trust Lattimore to go? I don't know. We'll find out. I think it's going to depend on how he's moving around in practice this week. All right, three more players to talk about next as we wrap up the show. And we're done because we just go to 6 o'clock today. We'll see if we can sneak in a Real Things as well. Some of the sound from the post game last night, including Magic Johnson holding court outside the Commander's locker room. That's all next as we wrap up the Hoffman Show on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are wrapping up because we got Maryland Hoops. Let's go Turtles coming up at 6 o'clock. Tip off 6:30 for the Terps tonight. But Johnny and the crew get going. Coming up at 6 here on your home for all things Maryland sports, the Team 980. I got to say, Anthony, we did miss one significant thing on Jalen McMillan and our pick 6 at 6. He was, it's not really his fault, but like the fumble from Baker Mayfield, he is on the end around there. And that's on Baker. Based off of Baker's body language and the fact that he was like, hey, that was me. But, you know, it does feel like it's probably worth mentioning. So shout out to Spaffron in the YouTube chat for mentioning that.
Was that supposed to go to McMillan? Or he would just...
I don't know. I didn't see any of the post-game stuff on the Tampa side of it to know whether that was a end around like that was mistimed and late, or whether it was supposed to be a fake and Baker just like hit it off his hip. I don't know what the situation was, whether it was supposed to be an end around or whether it was supposed to be like a fake and then a bootleg situation. Collinsworth was musing about that on the broadcast, and you'd have to ask them, and I did not see that. So if people want to drop that in the chat, they can, but we're going to keep things moving. Number four. That's what I said. Number four. Bucky Irving, Anthony, who was exactly who Bucky Irving is. He is a big-time explosive runner when he has clean looks, but is limited in that he's only going to get, like, he's not going to create a bunch of big runs out of nothing. If you give him a crease, he's going to kill you. And he did a really good job in this game, especially in the second half, of killing the Commanders a couple of times. But it wasn't the carry over carry consistency that, you know, you're afraid of with, I think, like a David Montgomery this week for Detroit. But he's also, you know, had a couple of other effective plays. I think Bucky Irving had a good game, but not so good that it obviously killed the Commanders and they couldn't overcome it. I guess that's the way I would describe it.
Yeah. I think on the ground, definitely, I ain't gonna lie, the first play, Bobby Wagner stuffs him. I thought that we were gonna be able, you know, set the tone from there, but later on in the game, they started, you know, just getting momentum going. But in the fourth quarter, I think we did a solid job, especially just to get the stop. Granted, it was a botched snap, but that's out of our control, Craig. We got him down, and we were able to, you know, get the ball back and eventually score. And I have one question, though. On the pick play, if that's the Commanders, are they calling a
That's a great question, dude.
I promise you, if that was us, Craig, we would have not gotten that call.
That definitely, like Collinsworth described it as a pick. And was it McMillan?
It was McMillan.
It was McMillan.
He pointed him out.
Right. That and the Ertz no call. The Ertz one is way more egregious. Yeah. But that was a pick like 4 yards down the field. There wasn't contact. I mean, McMillan does a good job of selling that he's running a route, but like also you pointed out the dude, then you ran straight into him.
And he
stopped
literally
very, very easily could have been offensive pass interference.
Because he scored. Was that? That was Bucky.
Yeah, that was Bucky Irving. Yeah. That's a good pull by you. On that, I forgot that that was Irving. His one of his two catches on the day. Mm-hmm. But I do think on that front, you know, Washington. Or we talked about how Tampa's got the best screen game in the NFL. Screen game really wasn't that big of a part of yesterday's day for them.
Nope.
So I do think that is probably worth mentioning. By the way, in terms of success rate and EPA per play, all those kinds of fun things, they held Bucky Irving to just a 47%. Success rate on his runs yesterday. So that was fifth best of all the running backs all weekend long. But his EPA per attempt, so kind of the damage that he does, was 10th best of all the qualified rushers. So like you have Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Jaden in there as well. But towards the bottom half of the running backs for the weekend. So all in all, a very, very good job by the Commanders. And let's see, can I even sort this? No, I can't sort it by quarter. I was hoping I could. So we'll roll with that. Those are the statistics on Bucky Irving. 7 carries, almost 80 yards, 2 catches. One of them was a touchdown that should have been called back. And the Commanders did a good enough job on him that they didn't lose. But also, I think the fact that he only had 17 carries, I think they would have liked more for Bucky Irving, but they couldn't because they couldn't get off the field, which brings us back to
number 5.
Number 5 in our pick 6, John Allen, Anthony, who I believe was your pick.
Yes, he was my pick, Craig, and you might not believe this, but he did not record a stat yesterday.
He didn't record a stat? I thought he had one somewhere.
Nah, so he was in on the TFL on the botch snap. He didn't complete the tackle, though. Mm. But he did hit him first, and then everybody else rallied to the ball. But even like, I looked at some of the all 22.
He's got one pressure, according to PFF.
Look, that counts then.
Yeah. He had a missed tackle.
But when you look at the all 22, I think him and Deron and Johnny as well, I think they did a solid job of, you know, just holding their guy at the point and allowing the linebackers or, you know, the safeties to, you know, come down and fill those lanes and get the tackles. And I think last year when we had Montez Sweat, Chase Young, and all those guys, a lot of those guys were playing for themselves. And I think yesterday was sort of them, you know, buying into like what everybody's preaching and allowing, you know, Bobby to fill the lanes or Louvu to come down, and we saw those guys at the lines making the play. So even though, you know, he doesn't show up in the stat sheet, it's still just something to, you know, note and watch that he did have some type of impact.
No, I think that's a good point. And I'll have a lot more on this on Allen and everybody tomorrow when I've had the chance to watch the All-22. But I think that's a great point. Like, there wasn't these huge gaps, you know, and to the point that there were, they were, you know, contained enough that guys like Chin were able to come down and make plays. Mm-hmm. So, Allen definitely not a huge impact yesterday. Newton and Payne had bigger impacts in terms of TFLs and everything. His PFF grade's like 40 something. It's not good.
Yeah.
But I don't think that John Allen was like heinous yesterday, Of course, the Commanders' D-line has a huge task this week against Detroit. That offensive line is grotesque.
Number 6.
Last but not least in our pick 6, went with Quan Martin, who I think was pretty good yesterday. Graded out very, very well. Graded out as a 70.4 overall, fourth best grade on the Commanders behind Wagner, Chin, and Louvu. And I think the biggest thing is he has an 82.9 tackling grade. He made some big plays in the open field where he one-on-one solo tackles guys like Mike Evans because his corners made mistakes and or just got beat. Like, it happens. There's a slant that Marshawn gets beat by Mike Evans, and Quan grabs Mike Evans and picks him up off the ground and slams him down. There's no big vertical plays over the top yesterday. Like, when was the last time that you remember a big vertical play over the top where Quan Martin was nearby? Like, Philly had a couple, I guess, with AJ?
Yeah.
But I don't think there was one against Dallas.
Nah.
I don't think there was any against Atlanta that I can remember. And big vertical shots down the field.
Nah.
So, tells you that Quan Martin's adjusted to this safety thing. Remember, it's his first year as a full-time safety. He was playing nickel last year. He played corner in college, played nickel in college. Little bit of safety, but he's adjusting quite well to this and under Dan Quinn, under Joe Witt, in coordination with Jeremy Chinn back there, Percy Butler rotating in. I think Quan's probably been the most consistent member of that secondary this year from start to finish, and I think he had another really good one yesterday. They're definitely going to need him to stay over the top and be hanging out over the top of Jameson Williams this week. And, you know, the other thing, too, is Quan was so close to making a play on that Mike Evans slant for the touchdown. Like, he plays that really well, gets his hands up, whatever. It's just a tick late. Quan, I need you to wear the Guardian helmet this week. I need you to grow your helmet size. That way, next time it doinks off your dome. Because had it literally been that extra quarter of an inch of padding, that might have been enough to be in the way. And just heck of a throw by Baker. Incredible concentration by Mike Evans. I don't think there's no way he saw that ball into his hands.
Yeah.
He just had to put his hands where he saw it going. Quan's helmet gets in the way. His hands don't move. The ball's fast enough that it hits him in the hands, and you kind of catch it blind.
Yeah, we talk about perfect throws, man. That was a perfect throw and throwing to a spot. Good gracious.
For sure. All right, that's pretty much the show. Anthony, do we have some of the post-game sound in the magical folder here? It looks like we do.
Yeah, I got Magic and Josh.
So let's get to it, eh? Let's get to that was our pick six, Real Things Real People Said, in two real microphones to close out the show.
Real things.
We're not going to be sucked this year.
Real people.
5-11, not very good.
Said into real microphones.
You know, the culture is actually damn good.
Culture's good now, everybody. Brucey, you're long, long gone. And thanks to guys like Magic Johnson and Josh Harris.
This man right here. No, this is serious. You said, what does it take? New vision, new owner with a strategy, picking the right people. First, our coach, Coach Quinn, Adam Peters, and then we all step out the way and let them do their job.
Talent, culture, and people.
There it is.
Talent, culture, and people.
So that's it. Don't make this about us. It's about those guys.
Yeah. Well, Matt, did you envision it happening this fast, 2 years?
Quarterback.
How could you?
Got to get a quarterback.
We'll see you guys in Detroit. It's going to be cool.
Make it about those guys.
Sorry, Magic, we played your soundbite, but your guys did a hell of a job. Congrats to the Commanders. On to Detroit we go. They're not done yet. We're done, though. See you back here tomorrow. Maryland Hoops next.